Greetings and salutations to our fine podcast audience. Welcome to Three Peas in a Pod, episode 290.
We made it.
10 away from 300. All the round ones just kind of make me think about that. You think we're going to make it to 300 before the end of the year?
I feel like it's more.
Well, yes. I think it's more likely than not.
More likely.
How many weeks we got left?
If I were wagering on that thing now that you can wager on anything.
Oh, isn't that funny? Whatever. You can bet on anything.
I bet by this time next year, we'll be at the more important number, which is 333. I like that number.
You like that number, huh?
I like 333.
You like that
a lot.
Half a six.
No, because it's what? That's a third repeating. Yeah. If you put a little decimal at the point, you just keep on going down. Eventually, you got to hit a four, but you just keep going. Do.
That's funny because one of my favorite podcasts, they'd had a 666 episode, The Holy Post, and then they talked about satanic stuff, which I thought was hilarious.
That was funny.
It's perfect. So anyway, we're going to make it. We're going to do our best to make it to 300. But until then, we got 10 more to go.
Speaking of your 666 thing, I was at the glasses. I was at the getting my glasses. I mean, just recently.
Oh, the optometrist.
The optometrist. Thank you. I've only been once, so I don't know the proper name. But I went, got my glasses. And while I'm there, there was somebody checking out, getting their price. One, their glasses, it sounded like were $600, it was 666. And they said, you're going to need to add something else onto that because I won't buy those glasses. I was like, why was it not subtract something from that? But I'll pay more money.
Yeah.
To get it off the 6.6. And they were dead serious. I thought it was a joke. I chuckled. I wasn't with them.
Early days of this church, do you remember Phillips 66 gas?
Oh, yeah. I remember Phillips 66. They probably still exist, don't they?
I don't know whether they do or not. But I had a Phillips 66 gas card, of which the first three numbers were 666.
Oh, my goodness.
And there was
you had the mark of the beast.
I know. There's a guy in our church that wanted, I had to go to his house to talk to him about the mark of the beast.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, well, I got it right here.
I bet he loved it.
Well, I said, and it's about buying and selling.
Yeah,
and I have it in my hand.
Oh, man.
And problem.
He doesn't come to our church anymore.
Really? So shocked to hear that. So today, Nathan has a topic he would like us to talk about.
But his great nephew does.
You didn't need to give all that information.
Just stop.
Here we go. Nathan's going to tee up today's topic.
Yeah, so the topic I have kind of comes from the series we're currently in while we're filming this called The God I Wish You Knew. And there's really a couple points of that. One, we've actually done a series with this title before years ago.
A long time ago.
Was a different kind of slant on it. But
you were but a tyke.
No, I was on staff.
Were you?
He preached one of them.
Then we did it again because I remember early in my career here doing something.
I wouldn't doubt it at all.
Yeah. Hey, we recycle things.
Oh my gosh, we do.
But yes, we did this series. But this one's a little different. And the goal of it is really to, one, paint a picture for people because they're certainly, our church has always been just very blessed by God to have people who have been either burned by the church or disinterested in the church or just new to faith in general, don't have any idea. And they are walking with us as we're walking towards Jesus. And we feel like it's occasionally important for us, to just really paint a clear picture of, hey, you're trying to figure out who Jesus is. This is the God I wish you. This is the God I wish. So it's on one end, if you don't know who Jesus is, this is who the scriptures reveal him to be. But then also to say to people who already know Jesus, God has placed people in your life around you who God intends for you to introduce them to the God that you wish they knew. And so it's really this kind of both and on that. But both of those are versions of telling the good news. And I think in the church world, there often is, and not just for church leaders, but also people within the church, who want to know what kind of church are you going to? What kind of church are you? I have those questions, and for a long time there was a term that kind of gets thrown around of seeker sensitive churches.
Oh boy!
And people, so I've had people even recently, in the last couple of years, go, "Are you guys a seeker sensitive church?" And they say it as if it's like a bad word.
Oh.
Like a curse word, you know, like, yeah, are you a seeker sensitive church? I've never had anyone use that term for me as like a, I really hope that that's what you're saying. It almost always, and there's some idea of you're primarily focused on winning souls for Christ, not necessarily focused on developing deeper and developing so Christians. It's
either we're going to be deep or we're going to be wide.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. Yeah. And then there are other churches that kind of go into, well, we're really, you know, discipleship focused. Mm-hmm. And we really want to take Christians and equip the saints and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so there's often feels like within the church world and within people who are kind of in Christian culture and are looking for churches, like there's a tension that you got to manage between reaching lost people and making people better disciples. And we even have strategies within church worlds of we have evangelism strategies, and then we've got discipleship strategies. And those are usually two ends of a different kind of, you know, funnel or different kind of pathway or whatever the thing is.
All right.
And the maybe not necessarily the question, but really a point of conversation for us to have is here at Community Christian, we really see those two things as intertwined, not as as
not separate.
Yeah, they're not. It's not a tension to be managed. You can't really do one without the other. And so here's how I'll set it up, and then we can talk about how it goes. Is the Great Commission, what the mission we were given to go do, which usually in churches that are really focused on the evangelism part. You're going to hear multiple sermons on this, right? It does not, Jesus doesn't go, I've been given all power and authority, and therefore go and teach my message to people. Or go, and I just recently, once again, reading Dallas, and he said, most of us go out with a message about Christ, not the message of Christ. We go and tell people about Jesus, not go with what Jesus said. And I thought, well, that's very convicting in the way that, you know, a guy who's been dead 10 years can still do. The instruction is go and make disciples, which assumes there are people who aren't disciples yet. And I need to make them disciples. And then on the other end of it, I've got to baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and Spirit. So that assumes there are people who are unbaptized that I need to. But then I've also got to teach those baptized people to do everything Jesus commanded and Jesus promises. And if that's what your life is about, I'm going to be with you always. There will never be a time that I'm not empowering that. I'm not walking alongside you. And so every evangelism effort I have has to be about discipleship in some way, about making a disciple. And every discipleship effort I have to do has to ultimately be with the end goal of these are people who could make disciples and be an evangelist of the good news. So in our mind, that's the way that works. But y'all have been in ministry longer than me and been in the church world longer than me. And so I'm sure you've also felt those tensions at times that certainly whether you have personally felt it, you felt other people bringing that tension into it. So what has that been like for you?
Wow. Well, gosh, I know you were going to ask me that question. How has that been like for me? I will say it has. Ed's been doing it a little longer than me. So, but I remember when starting out in ministry, there was definitely that sense of a tension. There was, it was a very much an either or thing. And I would say, to be fair, everybody felt like it was something we should be doing both of.
Right.
We should be developing believers deeper, to use that phraseology you just did, but also becoming a church that is casting that wide net and making it, you know, not difficult for people outside of the community to find their way to Jesus. And then once they're here, growing them deeper. But I will say that definitely was presented like two separate things.
Yeah, I think the challenge in my lifetime of doing this, which, you know, thinking about this really began in the 1980s. So it's a long time ago for me to begin thinking about it. The challenge has always been in the church world. It was at the church world at that time, or if it did exist, it was really underemphasized and hard to find. When you talk about making disciples, not everybody agreed on what that looked like.
Mm. That's true.
And so there was an ability, there was a thought of, I can help someone come to Jesus, but what to do? Because it's evident, and even this is still true, the idea, what Jesus says, teach them to obey everything that I commanded you. At one point when I was really beginning to get some legs around this, our elders here at Community Christian took about a year and a half, and we did a, every time we'd meet, we would have taken a part of the Gospels, and we listed out everything that Jesus commanded anybody. And I don't know of a system that is teaching everything that Jesus commanded. Okay. Now, there are big overarching principles that, and a bunch of them, you can boil them down that they all fit in the general, because Jesus would say a similar thing in a different way a bunch of times. So you could say all these are saying the same thing.
And you got to put context on that.
That's too, exactly right.
There are some things Jesus said to just one person.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Don't apply to everybody.
That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. So you had, and you can even see then in the epistles, which we also did, that even the earliest disciples of Jesus are not emphasizing, or at least in what we have, they do not emphasize everything Jesus commanded.
Sure.
That's right. So the earliest part of my ministry, that was the challenge. Not everybody could agree on what this really was. And deep became, because it's easy, deep became Bible education.
Yeah,
we thought if we could get everybody to do Bible study, and I mean word studies, and tearing every verse apart where, you know, if you could do a Bible study and you spend an hour and a half and you talk about three verses, those folks were boring. They called them deep. Right. I mean, you know, it was, that's how we defined, now we've handled, we've got them to be Christians and we are taking them deep.
Yeah.
But it didn't lead to much. Like, yeah. And so, there was a whole way around, you know, we're going to get people then to just do some things. And so I've seen it come full circle. And the problem is, it's just really hard. It has been hard to marry those two in a way that every church, I do think every church has always wanted it. Yep. I don't think there's anybody that follows Jesus.
That's right.
That hasn't wanted it to happen. And often the pastor's passion has pushed one way or the other. It's just hard. It's been hard to get language around and get churches unified on it.
Yeah.
And we've done a better job of that, I would say. And it took us, it's taken us a long time. And whether we have it right or not, I don't know whether we have But
we're never
we're 10 years into this thing of, I remember I had written on my wall for years a piece of paper that we did at a retreat that at the end of there was a blizzard, which may have indicated something.
I remember that.
And the top of the page, the thing I posted on my wall was, discipleship is the answer for everything.
Yeah.
And that's where we began to change, to go toward discipleship that would lead to evangelism, and evangelism that would lead to discipleship. And that became our focus. And that was right at 10 and a half, 11 years ago.
And I will say, Nathan, you're going to love what I'm about to say. Just going ahead and preface this. You're going to love what I'm about to say.
That makes me feel like I'm not going to love
it. I am currently, right now, as we speak, reading The Patient Ferment of the Early Church.
No, you're not.
I am. It's on my nightstand. Funny. It's on I'll take a picture tonight.
All right.
I'm literally in the middle of that book. That's
I'm going to commit here publicly on episode 290. I'm never, ever reading that book.
That's Nathan's favorite book.
It is my favorite. It's at least my favorite book to reference. I do like to reference that book a lot.
Two of my closest partners have read it. I don't know why I would need to.
That's true.
You made us quote everything. I just need to listen to them.
I will say, in Alan Kreider's assessment of the early church, when he looks at what the early church was defining as everything Jesus taught that they were obeying, they kind of honed in on the Sermon on the Mount.
That's right. That's right.
That was sort of their guide to this is what Jesus taught.
That's right.
That's
right. And we're going to try to figure out how to live that out. He also makes the point of, for them, and he just says, the very first 300 years of the church, you don't see the word evangelism
right,
pretty much at all.
Right.
Right.
So for them, it was not two categories.
Yes. Right. It was one thing.
And their one thing was living this patient lifestyle of the Sermon on the Mount.
In front of other people.
In front of the world.
Yeah.
So that's what they were doing. So
they assumed, at least in Crider's point, I've heard other people make this point as well, which is they assumed evangelism will take care of itself as I become a person who is following the way of Jesus. And what I don't mean by that is this thought that, like, you know, people are just going to recognize that's it on right. their own. Mm-hmm. What they mean is it will eventually, and it's kind of what we've been saying in this God I Wish You Knew, and I almost titled it this, which is A God Worth Knowing, because I do think the issue for most believers, I'm talking about myself, this was a conviction I came to years ago, even when I was in ministry, which was the reason I feel like I have to sell people on Jesus is because I don't think Jesus sells himself. Mm. And I feel like I encountered a God worth everyone knowing?
Yeah.
Because if what I've encountered is a solution to everyone else's problems, you're afraid of going to hell when you die, or you're afraid of all these bad things in your life, Jesus will fix that for you, then I've got to sell a solution to a problem, not what we've been saying in this, that Jesus, life with God is the pearl of great price. And when a person will see it, they will inevitably, and not just that they'd be drawn to me, I would share it in such a way that they would go, oh, this will be it. Now, that doesn't mean everyone will want it, because people were walking with Jesus. Jesus could not be more clear about who he was.
That's right.
Right.
And everyone looks at him and goes, nope, not for me. That which goes a little bit to the episode we had last week. But it is possible to see Jesus clearly and say, that's not who I want. And so that doesn't mean I'm no longer responsible for selling people on Jesus. My job is to become a person who is so enraptured by Jesus, so in love with Jesus, and so convinced that he is at work all around me all the time in the lives of other people, that if I would pursue him in their life, then he would open doors for me to say, hey, this thing you're experiencing, this hunger in yourself, or even this disappointment with life, all of that is a sign God is doing something. And if you lean into that, that would change everything. But what I then became clear of at that time was I don't know how to live that life, because that's not been my experience of Jesus has been what Ed just described, which was I've got to, and at the time I was in school, going back to school to learn about Jesus. And I'm getting deeper into the, and I'm learning, and I'm going, this will inevitably produce something in me. If I learn enough and I know enough, and then I can teach other people in such a way that they'll know enough and they'll be able. When I eventually realized what I've got to learn how to do is how do I experience God's life in me more? And how do I experience God's life among other people? That's a different set of skills that I do not currently have. Which means I've got to disciple under Jesus, because Jesus did experience that. Jesus walked around and said, everything I do, it's because I see the Father doing it, right? Everything I say, it's because I heard the Father say it. He seemed to experience a way of life where God was always present, God was always active, God was always doing something. And so he was just bearing the yoke alongside the Father. He was just doing the work alongside him. And so I think when I now think more about discipleship and what we're trying to do as a church in the lives of people when people come, I really do think this language, that once again doesn't originate with us. I know Dallas Willard used it a lot. The first person I heard use it was a guy named Nathan Foster, who is Richard Foster's son. And he talked a lot about this idea of interactive life with God, that what Jesus came to offer, what life in the kingdom is, this interactive life with God. It's not this static thing where it's a subject I learn about in a book, or it's a class that I master. It's a relationship that is interactive everywhere I go. That requires discipleship, but the nature of it is that's going to be the way we call it in one of our discipleship programs here on Mission. We call it on the job training. Mm-hmm. It's not, I go off to a classroom and I learn, you know, as Ed was talking, I get real deep mm-hmm. and I learn all the things I need, and then I'll be prepared to go out. Or what is really big right now in Christian circles is I'm going to adopt a bunch of practices I didn't have before, and I'll get really holy, and then I can go out and do stuff for other people. The way Jesus seemed to do it was he grabbed fishermen and tax collectors, and he goes, all right, we're going out. I'm going to heal people. And then he turns at one point, I'm going to give the Spirit to you. You're going to go heal people, which you got to imagine the fisherman's like, I'm not sure. I can't take the next guy. This mm-hmm. is not going to be it, which we see. Occasionally they'll come and go, we can't cast out a demon. Mm-hmm. And they go, how do I do it? Jesus goes, you'll need prayer and fasting to do that. The reason they took on the practice, and this is the way Dallas Willard would talk about it, is the practice was to achieve a goal. All exercises are to achieve a goal. It's not to get good at the exercise. I don't pray to get good at prayer. Mm-hmm. I don't fast to get good at fasting. I fast for a purpose. Mm-hmm. I pray for a purpose, and that produces something within me that then I actually would have something to share with other people. And so when I think about the way that when people say, what kind of church are you, you know, seeker sensitive? Well, we are very aware of the fact that there are people.
I'm going to say, are we sensitive to those who are seeking? I would hope so.
Yes, I think we are. I think we are very, and we're very aware. And I watch lots of church services. I think we are aware in ways that I go, we're constantly saying to people, if you don't believe, here's what we're doing. Here's why we do it. We're never we're never even changing what we do. We're not apologizing for what we do. Because when I was explaining to someone who was Shay, who just came onto our staff, when I was talking with her before she moved here, I said, I don't even think of what we do as putting things on a lower shelf for people. Mm-hmm. We're just saying, here's who we follow and here's what we do. I just want you to understand why we're doing it. I just want to explain it to you.
It doesn't have to be a lower shelf. I do think it is a way of going, if you had somebody in your house and they said, where's the restroom? Mm-hmm. And you go, oh, by the way, the hand towels are right over there.
Or the toilet has this weird thing.
It's just loving.
That's right.
It's not. It's just me explaining to them. I'm not very kind to a guest if I don't explain to them, hey, that toilet's going to run. It ain't your fault. Just, you know, that ain't your fault. That's going to happen. We just don't fix those things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But are we willing also in services or in programs that we have to say things that would be unpopular?
Sure.
Or might be even come across offensive? If you don't agree with what Jesus says on that, and are we willing to teach that? Absolutely, we are, because our goal is we want to form people who desire Jesus. And if Jesus says this is the way to live, that's the way we're going to try and walk after it. And so it's not a matter of watering something down or deepening it. It's presenting who we understand Jesus to be through the scriptures.
And through our lives and our mm-hmm. community together. Mm-hmm. I think the way we tend to describe it nowadays, we're Jesus people. Mm-hmm. We're just ordinary people that are trying to live our lives. I do think as long as you can allow people to experience it, if it becomes apparent over time, they see you in a situation that they can't imagine being in, and the way that the Lord helps you handle it is vastly different. That becomes intriguing to people.
Yeah.
You don't have to sell it like this, because they may never have the same situation, mm-hmm. but they've watched other people go through it and they didn't handle it that way. And the Lord helped you handle it a different way. And when they ask you why, you go, well, you know, the Lord helped me with that. Mm-hmm. I was able to go through that with the Lord and he would help you in whatever situation. You may never have the same situation, but you have situations that you need help with. He's willing to give grace for that. And, you know, grace is just the power to be able to do what you can't do right now.
Mm-hmm. Which is all the more reason for us to become those kind of people.
Right.
Yes.
Who are being led and helped and guided through life by the Spirit of Jesus. And I'm not saying it's, I don't want you to hear me say it's a sin for a Christian to be anxious or a sin for angry. But if I am not becoming a less anxious person,
right,
less angry person in my development, again, slow development, you know, long obedience in the same direction, that's what we say around here. But if I am not becoming that, then what am I offering to the world? Yeah. If I'm becoming more crotchety as I get older, I certainly am not showing a pearl of great price to the world that they would want.
That's where the practices are of value to us I have to figure out what practice. There are a lot of things that nobody wants to talk about. This people read, I think, Romans 7 very wrong, and that Paul's making excuses of there are things I don't want to do, and I just do it. And, there's nothing I can do about that.
Jesus saved me.
That's not what he's saying.
No,
because later he says all those things you need to rid yourself of that, and there are practices. What he's saying is my spirit doesn't want this, but this is bound up in my bodies. It's in my members. And there are things that our body has just done and felt and for long periods of time.
That's right.
That we must, as Paul would say, train our body. I beat my body, he says, daily to bring it into submission.
You know, Ed, you just remind me of a conversation I just had last week. I was in my own mission group with a guy who, he and I have known each other now, gosh, it's well over 20 years. He's been a part of this church for at least that long. I've been here for 30. And we just got to talking, and both of us were able to sit there and look at each other, and we both said this in different ways. You know, you are different. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first met you, and he said the same thing to me. He said it's been a joy to do decades alongside of you, and I have seen the Lord change you. Mm-hmm. And I look back at him and I said, well, I said, I especially have seen the Lord change you in the last five. Mm-hmm. And I said, something has gone on in your life and your heart that the Lord is really developing some things in you that I think are beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was a precious time that we spent together, and it reminded me of, you know, I've had this conversation with my wife too. And we sat down and watched our wedding video for my daughter, who's now engaged, and she wanted to watch it. And I got done watching that video, and I had this experience, and I looked at my wife and I said, I feel like I owe you an apology. She said, why? And I said, because that guy on that video was an idiot compared to what I see now. And I am no saint. I am not perfect under any stretch, but the Lord has been gracious and has shown me and changed me. I don't think the way I used to back then.
Right.
I don't feel the way I feel back then. I hope I am more of an imitator of Christ now, and I feel like I'm getting there. But that's the work that the Spirit has been able to do, and it's taken decades.
And it isn't just the Spirit. It's me cooperating.
Cooperating with
Him. I don't want to give the idea that we are not among those that believe in sanctification as a process that is a second work of grace just happens.
Mm-hmm.
It is a work of grace,
but
it's a work of grace alongside of me. I have to participate in what God is wanting to do in my life and allow that to happen. Mm. And all the sins of the flesh, and they're often just in my flesh.
Yep. That's right.
They have become not a part of my spirit. I don't want them, but my body wants them.
Yeah.
And I have to train myself.
But over time, my body has become less wanting.
That's right.
That has been amazing to see.
That's right. Yeah, the Spirit will lead you to all of that.
Yeah, and that's something I say that I have not done. And in some ways, I go, how did that happen?
Right, that's right.
Because I would have never thought that way or felt that way or wanted the way I currently want. That's a work
that
was done within me along with my cooperation with the Spirit. And thanks be to God for that. I think that's what Paul was talking about.
Yeah.
Thanks be to God that I have been saved
that's right.
from
that's
that.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's
you know, that's been a blessing.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. And I think that then ultimately becomes the gift that I can give to other people, is that I actually have experienced.
Well, what we're called to be is witness, which mm-hmm. assumes I have experienced something. Mm. A yeah. witness has to have seen something, experienced something. You can't testify about something that you haven't experienced. And it isn't just the moment of salvation.
Yeah.
I am a witness to what I am currently experiencing with Christ.
Yeah.
What is currently happening in my life. I am a witness to that.
Well, and the message of Christ is that the kingdom of God is at hand.
Right.
Which means, you know, I just read this morning in one of my devotional times. It means in the same way that you would say, the dining room is right there. He's saying it's as close as your hand is to touch. And what that's saying is, well, that's what you're witnessing to. What you're witnessing to is there is a life that is available right here, and you can experience it right now. Now, that won't mean that you'll experience it all the way that you will experience it in 30 years
right.
or in 40 years, or that you will eventually experience in the fullness of the kingdom, mm-hmm. but you can experience the same power and presence right here, which people do experience. That's why often, and I think it's because the picture people are handed is this moment of salvation thing. Most people do have this moment where, and I'm talking about this on Easter, where it's like the lights come on. It's your road to Damascus moment. The lights come on, and that it's very clear. Oh, this is what the kingdom feels like. This is what Jesus feels like. This is what, and it's emotionally overwhelming. And you go back to that moment mm-hmm. again and again because it was so clear. But then I'm saying this on Easter as well. There's also the road to Emmaus, which is more like a sunrise than like the lights coming on, which is you walk beside Jesus every single day and you don't recognize it's always him. Yeah. But then there comes a moment where you go, why am I heart burning all along? Which is the part you're talking about where you look back 20 years mm-hmm. and you go, oh, God was with me all those moments. Oh, yeah. And he was shaping me and he was forming me. And that
was so patient.
And he was so patient and he shows me all of these things. And it's more like a sunrise where it's hard to tell in the moment, is it dawn or is it dusk? But then there comes a moment, once it's noon, everybody knows it's daytime.
Yeah.
It's not the lights coming on like a blinding light like it did for Saul, where it knocks you off your horse and you're like, oh, there's Jesus. It's sometimes very slow, but that's the witnessing part is I'm going, I don't even have to see too much of the light. When I'm in the darkness, when I see any light, I can point you to the light. Mm-hmm. I don't see the picture as clear as maybe someone who's walked 30 years. I haven't, you know, tasted and seen as much as everyone else, but I can see the light. And the moment that I see the light, I can point someone else to the light. And that's the goal is, but there are people who, and this happens to many of us, I get so obsessed with, well, I'm going to go off and take the light. And I'm going to go over here and me and the light are going to get really close. And Jesus describes that as putting a bushel over it. Mm-hmm. And he says, what you got to do is once you got the light, you got to go let that light shine in front of me. Mm-hmm. You got to let whatever light you get, no matter how big or small it is, people got to see it. And that doesn't take you to be able to do everything Jesus commanded to do it. You can do it on the way, on the journey, and it'll happen. Because a lot of people, which is why a lot of people, when they first get saved, is when they reach the most people.
Yeah.
Because they see a little bit of the light, but that light is so clear to them. Because they were in darkness so long, they go, you got to see this. But it is possible for a person 30 years in to still be just as fruitful if they're still just aware of, I'm walking with the light. I'm walking with it. So anyway, that was a good discussion. That's what I wanted us to talk about. And certainly for people at Community Christian, it's the life we want everyone to experience, whether you're brand new to faith or whether you've been walking with Jesus for 30, 40, 50 years, mm-hmm. is that every day the light just gets a little brighter and you're able to point someone else towards the light a little bit more.
There you go. I hadn't said this in a few episodes, so I'll just say it. If you want us to talk about a specific topic, not the ones that he brings in.
That's right. Whatever I got.
Off of Reddit or wherever else.
Wherever it's coming from.
Anyway, if you want us to talk about a certain topic or you have a question you want us to tackle, there's always a link in the description to the video and to the podcast. You can just click there and send it to us, and we'll get right on it as fast as we can. So, all right. I don't know if we'll be here next week. Maybe not. Maybe take a week off. We'll see, depending on what y'all send us. But until next time, see you later.